welcome to another great week of broadcasting right here on News Talk 1110-993 WBT. I'm Brett Witterble. How are you? Our phone number to be a part of the conversation, 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. As we speak, we're sort of keeping one eye on the closing arguments being made in the Chauvin trial there in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Earlier today, the prosecution did their closing argument. Now the defense, starting at about, I'd say about 12:30, 1 o'clock, began their closing arguments. Then there will be a rebuttal by the state, by the prosecutor, and then there'll be the instructions to the jury, and they'll be off and deliberating at some point here. It's expected that this jury will be sequestered, and we will wait and see what they decide in this case. Obviously, everybody is paying very close attention to what it is that's happening there in Minnesota on a number of fronts. The Floyd matter, of course, the White matter as well. And, you know, people want to know what's going to happen. Against that backdrop, here's what you had take place on Saturday night. Maxine Waters made her way into the crowd there in the in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, and began speaking and said that it's important to keep people in the streets. It's important to advocate for this cause. And it's important to also, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, confront, be confrontational with law enforcement. Keep it up, keep it up, keep it up. Last week, remember, we did have that soundbite from that Antifa protester who was out there saying you have to throw things at the cops so that they understand that you're mad, which, you know, I think is an incredibly, you know, misplaced notion. But before Maxine Waters, the congresswoman from Los Angeles, California, went out there and issued her exhortation to the folks, we know that, well, she used Minneapolis police for an armed police escort to Minneapolis over the weekend, where she called for the protesters to continue to confront the police. She flew from Dulles International Airport to Minnesota St. Paul International Airport on Saturday, April 17th. That's just days ahead of the verdict in this case that's on trial right now for Derek Chauvin. That night, Waters went to meet the protesters and demanded a guilty verdict for Chauvin or else. I know we've got to stay in the streets. We're looking for a guilty verdict. If nothing does not happen, then we only have to stay in the streets and we have to fight for justice. I'm hopeful and I hope we're going to get a verdict that is guilty, guilty, guilty. If we do not, we cannot go away. Republicans are condemning the comments in that regard because she went on to say that confrontation is going to be the next thing that's going to have to happen. The implication being that you're going to confront the police, the very police who gave her an armed escort into Minneapolis, which I think is just kind of ironic and rich and interesting. But, you know, that's what happens when you are rich and interesting to people. You had that unfolding. I had a very pleasant Saturday, though. My Saturday was quite pleasant. I spent it with the NC9 convention out in Monroe. It was a wonderful get together. I got to make a whole bunch of new friends. It was really the first sort of unofficial meeting of the people here in the communities here in North Carolina, and I had a great opportunity. My good friend John Stewart was there with his lovely wife, who listens to the show every single day, and me and my wife made a lot of nice contacts with the folks who were there. One of them I got to have a nice extended conversation with was Congressman Dan Bishop and his wife, and I got to hang out with the governor, Pat McCrory, who was there. Pat McCrory was there, a number of other candidates were there. Mark Walker was there, all sort of laying the foundations for their case to become the next senator from North Carolina. It was a fascinating exploration of the issues. And folks, I got to tell you, it's exactly the same issues you're thinking about. It is about reopening. It is about ending the tyranny of these mask mandates and ending the tyranny of Roy Cooper and Gretchen Whitmer and Andy Cuomo and Phil Murphy and Gavin Newsom and Tony Evers and the governors who are representing not the best interests of the constituencies, but instead representing the best interests when it comes to raw, naked power and shutting things down and dragging their feet when it comes to reopening. There was concern great concern about what it was that was happening at the southern border. I do know that Kamala Harris made her way here to North Carolina this past day today, and I would have encouraged her to go to the border, not the border with Virginia or the border with South Carolina or the border with Georgia. I would encourage her to get out there and go to the border. Go to the border of the United States with Mexico, where the crisis continues. I was the host of WBT's Big Story yesterday morning, starting at 7 a.m. Jam-packed weekend. I mean, literally, I was just constantly working. And one of the big issues that came up were a number of questions about the border and why it is that the vice president of the United States has gone 25 days without a press conference. 25 days without a press conference on border matters. Last we heard was a media avail of her describing an intended visit to Guatemala, but nothing else really moving in that regard. And it's a troublesome situation all the way around. So as you look at the way these stories are all kind of playing out and moving about, one thing is certain. There's a lot of angst out there in the country. There's a lot of concern out there in the country. People are not confident that the governor of Minnesota, the mayor of Minneapolis, the mayor of Brooklyn Center are going to be able to keep a handle on the situation as Congresswoman Waters comes in and wades into the waters and talks about the need for confrontation against members of law enforcement if the verdict doesn't satisfy Congressman Waters. It's going to be an interesting next few days. We'll take you on that journey here, there, and everywhere, and certainly want to invite you to check in with us on the Facebook page at the Brett Winterbull Show and at the Winterbull Show Twitter page, and of course, as always, at the WBT Facebook page as well. I am Brett Winterbull, News Talk 1110 and 99.3. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. I didn't want to throw you guys off, and I just wanted to hear Kickstart My Heart again. So that was an editorial decision on my part. I just wanted you to hear the amazing sounds of Motley Crue. One of the things that's interesting about today and the way it's unfolding is the way the defense and the way the prosecutions have laid out their arguments in this Chauvin trial. One thing that I thought was a pretty slick move by the prosecutors were to not put the police, in quotes, right, the police on trial, and not to put the police department on trial. Because remember, the prosecutor still has to work with law enforcement elements when it comes to, prosecuting cases. What the chief prosecutor did in his closing argument today, and will no doubt go back to in rebuttal, was to separate Derek Chauvin from the police department and to essentially say, these are dedicated men and women in law enforcement who do not act the way Derek Chauvin acted. That was essentially the argument he made and spoke of, indifference to human suffering and reckless disregard and those sorts of arguments. But he didn't make this either A, about the police department, and B, he didn't make it any sort of a racial or racially tinged issue. He treated it as somebody who violated policy, violated rules, and took the life of a man who shouldn't have lost his life with a knee on his neck for 9 minutes. And so that I thought was a very sophisticated move by the prosecutors to not put law enforcement on trial, because there's no reason to do that. The overwhelming majority of law enforcement folks are committed, are patriotic, and are interested in seeing justice be carried out and seeing laws be enforced. Chauvin becomes the person who is not the typical character. That's number one. Number two, then you add in the narrative that you sort of saw take root with Dante White there in Brooklyn Center, where you have a police officer who's been relieved of her position or resigned her position there in the police department in Brooklyn Center because she fired a weapon, a Glock, instead of firing a taser. And so now she's potentially facing liability and of course, a potential prosecution. We'll see what happens then. But you've had a pretty effective messaging campaign from the prosecution here and from the defense to a large extent as well, to try to not do what it was that Representative Waters did on the streets during the period of the curfew on Saturday night there in Minneapolis. And this is a fundamental flaw in the way we are having these fights break out. The fundamental flaw is politicians carry with them an extra degree of potential, I think, liability if they don't work to de-escalate a situation. Unfortunately, Maxine Waters has a track record of this, trying to inflame situations. We saw what happened back in 2018 when she actively demanded that Trump administration officials be surrounded, form a crowd, yell at them, scream at them, tell them that they're not welcome anywhere. If you see them in a gas station, a department store, anywhere, you're to tell them they're not welcome anywhere in this country. That was Maxine Waters' rhetoric. That was an incredibly dangerous bit of rhetoric coming from a congresswoman out of Los Angeles, because it essentially put a bead on a lot of these people's heads. And so to do that back in 18, to do this now the other night, I think carries with it a very dangerous bit of crowd stoking, getting the crowd to get agitated and to get angry. What we have seen, and we saw it overnight with violence in Raleigh. We've seen it for the last 300 plus nights in the violence in Portland. We have seen it on and off in the violence in Minneapolis and beyond, and in Chicago. What we have seen are radicals taking to the streets looking to destroy property, but destroy property that has nothing to do with the underlying issue or concern. The idea that you would burn or loot businesses as a punishment to the Minneapolis Police Department doesn't make any sense at all. It doesn't make any sense. It's on par with you or I suffering some sort of an injustice, maybe a grave injustice, maybe a feloniously grave injustice. And our first order of business is to go three doors down from our house and start lighting it on fire and smashing windows because we want action. Unless that homeowner was the person who perpetrated, committed, arranged that grave injustice, you have no business going and destroying somebody else's business or home or public education institution or any of that sort of stuff. Why was there rioting in Raleigh last night? Does Raleigh have any connection to Derek Chauvin? Does Raleigh have any connection to Dante White? Does Raleigh have any connection to those? So why would there be rioting and burning of stuff in Raleigh? Oh, Brett, come on. You know what's going on. What's going on? People have had it, and they are demonstrating their anger. Okay, demonstrating your anger. But why are you burning buildings? Why are you throwing chemical bombs in the faces of cops in New York City? We watched that take place. Why is any of that happening? Overwhelmingly, it's happening in places where they have actually de-emphasized policing. In fact, over the weekend, a perpetrator attempted to murder an undercover Asian American police officer in the subway in New York. The perpetrator attempted to push that officer into the path of an oncoming subway car as he yelled Asian slurs at that officer. That officer was a police officer of Asian descent. That perpetrator was taken into jail after the attempted murder of a police officer and was immediately released because the district attorney in New York doesn't believe in bail. And so what could have been a tremendous tragedy, an Asian officer working the subways to try to stop anti-Asian hate crimes, may end up still becoming a hate crime down the road. I'm Brett Winterble, News Talk 1110-993 WBT. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterble Show. Great to be here with you. Lots of stuff out there happening. Let's dive into some of the other big stories that are out there moving around. President Trump is going to speak tonight. He's going to do an interview with Sean Hannity starting at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. I saw an excerpt of his interview talking about the border and talking about the hypocrisy of kids in cages relative to what was happening when he was there in the office. And now that Joe Biden is in the office, you know, it was kind of an interesting little opportunity. We know that on the 28th of April, so that will be 9 days hence, you will see President Biden do an address to the joint session of Congress. It's not the State of the Union address, but it's the thing that passes for the State of the Union address whenever you have the new president come into office. So going to be interesting to see what the president, President Trump, lays down in terms of talking points, issues, things like that, and to see if maybe he does anything that's a revelation of sorts in speaking to Hannity tonight. So that's going to be coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern time. More being learned now about Brandon Hole. Brandon Hole was that FedEx shooter. Apparently, I don't get this at all. I don't understand this at all. He was obsessed with My Little Pony as a part of a bronies group who fixate on a kid's toy. Now, this guy was 19 years old. This guy was 19 years old. The teen who shot down 8 people before turning the gun on himself at a FedEx facility in Indiana was reportedly part of an internet subculture obsessed with My Little Pony. His now deleted Facebook page appeared to show he was a member of the bronies community. Some adult men in the group claim to be sexually attracted to cartoon characters. I have heard it all. I have heard it. You have got to be kidding me. Please reopen. Reopen everything and let people get the heck out of their basements and attics and crawl spaces. What are you talking about? The 19-year-old pulled the weapon out of his trunk and started shooting for up to 2 minutes during a FedEx night shift change at the operations center in Indianapolis. Hole reportedly made a final post in the group, mostly filled with men who are fixated on kids' toys and shows, less than an hour before his shooting spree began. His post included a picture of the fictional blonde pony Applejack. Applejack? Who is the show's main character? I've never seen my Little Pony, My Pretty Pony. The only ponies I like are the ones that run at like Gulfstream and Aqueduct. I like those ponies because those things can make you money. I don't gamble. I don't gamble. But if I did, those are the ponies I'd be interested in, not cartoon ponies. Cartoons. You're 19 years old. You're watching cartoons. This is a problem. Or it was, obviously. His post included a picture of the fictional blonde pony. I hope I can be with Applejack in the afterlife. My life has no meaning without her. He posted on Facebook before going in and doing the shooting rampage. The bronies group has a history of far-right extremist tendencies. Nazi ponies? Are you talking about Nazi ponies? What does that mean? How do you... I don't even know... Gosh... I said this last week. I said, I love working so much. I love working, okay? I get grumpy when I go on vacation. Like, I love working. And I would gladly take whatever extra time people have that don't want to work, that want to go sit in a 4chan, 8chan, 16, 27chan, whatever that is. They want to sit in chat rooms and chat about my pretty pony. I'd be like, give me all your hours in the day because I can be more productive than you can since you are obviously somebody fixated on something that makes no sense. Nazi ponies or Nazi cartoon character. What is this? We got to reopen. I'm telling you, we got to reopen. People get, what do they say? Idle hands are the devil's workshop. Idle hands are the devil's playthings. We have got to reopen stuff up here. I'm sorry. I don't mean to harsh Anthony Fauci's buzz, but we've got to reopen stuff. Does anybody play sports anymore? Like, I don't even care what you're doing. Like, go learn like Wing Chun or something. Like, learn a martial art. Do fencing. Build a fence. I don't care. Whatever it is. You're wasting your life if you're in a bronies group at 19. I don't even know what that means. I read it fast. I thought it was brownies. And I'm like, I love it when the cookies come around. The term brony is a combination of the slang word bro and pony. That's ridiculous. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I took bro. I don't use bro. Yeah, really, in my nomenclature, bro is not part of my nomenclature. I don't use bro. An internal Facebook memo they reviewed that detailed the post said, "Brony online culture has displayed elements of far-right and white nationalist extremism." But Facebook said, "There's no clear evidence it motivated the shooting. He bought the weapons that he used in the attack despite fears about his mental health." Wait, we were told 2 weeks ago we're going to fix it all with red flag warnings. There's going to be red flags, and you're not going to go and do this kind of stuff. What happens? This is the second guy with the red flag warnings. The guy in Boulder, this guy, they got warnings. Nobody stops them. He purchased two assault rifles, in July and September. Authorities seized a shotgun from Hull last year after his mother called police saying she was worried he was going to commit suicide by cop. The shotgun was not returned. The seizure should have prevented Hull, who killed himself following the Thursday night killing spree, from legally buying another weapon. Indiana's, quote, red flag laws allow a judge to bar someone deemed dangerous from having a firearm. It's unclear if he ever had a red flag hearing. But we need red flag laws, Joe Biden says. Help me out here. Just brony membership alone should DQ you from, like, a lot of stuff. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, Brett Winterble Show. Well, this sticky wicket called the bronies thing is too bizarre for me. If you can be what are they, horse Nazis? Brony Nazis? Bro Nazis? What are they called? Brony Nazis, I guess. Can you be a Bromunist? Are there communist bronies? Bronies. This is a problem. See, this is a huge problem. And I'm going to tell you something. The more people get isolated and the more they get siloed into their own world, you're going to have more and more weird challenges in life. And I'm just telling you right now. This was sort of the whole objective of Silicon Valley. This was the entire objective, to make sure that you never went out and played ball, you never went out on dates, you never went out and had a meal. Everything just gets delivered to you. You just take a Uber Eats or a DoorDash or a Spotify. Spotify will bring you wings. I'm just making up nonsense. But this idea that, like, we're not going out, being in nature, and believe you me, there are very few people more hostile to nature than me, mostly because I pulled weeds over the weekend. But let me just say this. You got to get out there and walk around in the grass. Lay in the grass. The grass is not for smoking. The grass is for walking around in. And you got to lay down out there. You got to get the sunlight in your body. So many of these people are locking themselves away in a dark room, in a crawl space, in a basement, in an attic, whatever it is. And they're not interacting with human beings. You know, I heard a conversation a while back between two people. It was two individuals that I was in close proximity to, but I was not part of the conversation. One of those deals where you're sitting in like the break room or wherever the vending machines are. So I was like getting a bottle of soda, and two guys were talking, and the one guy says, "Gosh, I can't find anybody I want to go out with on Tinder." It's what he really said. He goes, "I can't find anybody I want to go out with on Tinder." And the other guy said, "Really? Really?" He goes, "Why not?" He's like, it seems like it's always the same people. Where do you go to meet people? And the guy looked at him and goes, "Outside, like out, like where people gather. That's where I go and meet new people. I don't just swipe up and down and left and right and flip a coin and all that. I'm not doing that." This is a cultural crisis we are in. I think it's a hugely important thing. I think a big part of it is the fact that you've had a mass attempt to create the impression that being a male is bad, And then when you bifurcate into a number of other things, you start putting other kind of constrictions on that. People don't know how they fit into society now. And you've got all this isolation, social isolation, professional isolation taking place because of the pandemic. And you've got these goofy people like Kate Brown, the governor of Oregon, and her health director, who want to have a mandatory mask order forever in Oregon. So, like, you got the shot? Doesn't matter. You got two of the shots? Doesn't matter. You got the J&J shot? Doesn't matter. Had COVID and got the shots? Doesn't matter. You have to wear a mask from now on. Why? You ever ask yourself that? I mean, I understand the logic of wearing a mask if you haven't been vaccinated. Or if millions and millions and millions of people haven't been vaccinated. I understand, like, if it's a year ago, okay, wear a mask. What else am I going to do? I'm like, the signs are at the store. They tell me I got to wear a mask to go in there, right? So I'm going to have to play ball. But we are a year later. We are coming up on May. And 84, 90 million people have gotten the shots. Why are you still wearing a mask? Because you could give it to somebody else. But I can't get it. I could get a variant, sure, I guess. You know, there have been 84 million vaccines given out in the country. And you know, there have been 6,000. So it's an 84 million. There have been 6,000 cases of coronavirus that people have caught, even though they got the vaccine. So just do that little integers. Dude, put those numbers together. Put 6,000 over 84 million and give me a percentage on that. It's going to have a lot of zeros before you ever get to the meat of the number. You have all these millions of vaccines go out, 6-7 million J&J vaccines. I got one of them. 6 or 7 million J&J vaccines. You got six people who had issues with the J&J vaccine. Okay, let's do that. Let's do 6 over 6 million. That's a 1 in a million shot. That's like lottery number time. So the more we're isolated, the more we're disconnected, the more we're not participating in the civic and civil society of life. I mean, what passes nowadays for socialization, it's pretty sad. It's pretty sad. It's Zoom calls and it's protest marches. And that's about it. There's nothing in between. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Joe Biden said, if we behave ourselves, we're allowed to barbecue meat in our backyard on July 4th. I remember that speech. And I remember how roundly roasted he was by people who said, not asking you permission for barbecuing, man. And I'm not asking you permission to talk to my neighbors. And I'm not asking you permission to bust out the slip and slide in the backyard. I'm not asking your permission for any of that stuff. You know, that's just, we're not asking permission. You have competing interests where you've got a group of people who, because of the shutdowns, have been socially isolated. And you've got dictators like Kate Brown and Gretchen Whitmer and Andy Cuomo and Gavin Newsom and Randy Weingarten and all these other people who are desperate to enforce that isolation on everybody, including the people who don't want to be a part of it. I can't wait till we start reading the psychological breakdowns of these elected and appointed officials who decided to go for the maximum possible power grab. They come in as reasonable, flatten the curve, 13 days to flatten the curve, 13 days to flatten the curve. You think about that. You know how many flattening the curves you could have over the period of 365 days? A lot. A lot. You know, it's 13 days to flatten the curve. Yeah, 28 different flattening the curve emergencies happening, huh? That's just dynamite. No, it's not. We've got to understand what we're up against. You decide what you want to do in terms of your vaccine. I'm not going to tell you to get a shot. I'm not going to tell you not to get a shot. But what I am going to tell you is this, is we got to figure out how we put this stuff back together, because the only people benefiting from the strife and the division in our country right now are the people on CNN, Fox News. What's the other one? Oh, MSNBC. Like, those are the only people benefiting from the division in this country. What about talk radio, Brett? Talk radio probably benefits a little bit, but unlike all the other media, cable, over-the-air network, streaming services, bloggers. We are the only people that take your phone calls because we respect your opinion and we'll take the calls. Up next in this next hour, Governor Ron DeSantis has signed a bill aimed at curbing violent protests and combating public disorder. This means they're going to ramp it up with every attack they can possibly put on this guy because he continues to point to his successes in Florida while little Tony Fauci runs around preaching the importance of Fauchism and triple masking and hiding out and hoping it'll all just go away. That's the game that's being played right now, folks. It is great to be here on a Monday, 7:04:05. It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you. Wonderful to be spending this time with you. All right, I got to pick up the pieces from last hour. I meant to do this, and I didn't do it, and I will be forever shunned from the great people of North Carolina if I do not open the show this hour with this. You know what it is? It's... Here's to the land of the longleaf pine, the summer land where the sun doth shine, where the weak grow strong and the strong grow great. Here's to the home, the old North State. So there you go. I wanted to open up that hour with that little reading, and that was to satisfy my good friends over at NC9. Here's the thing. There is an interesting dichotomy breaking out there in Minneapolis. Everybody is watching very, very closely to see what is going to happen in the Chauvin trial, right? We know that we've gotten to closing arguments. They're being delivered. There's going to be instruction happening at some point. All of that is going to happen. The jury will theoretically be heading on into the jury room to begin deliberations. They'll be sequestered. They won't be out and about and be public. All of that is happening in pretty much real time. So you got a whole bunch of stuff happening there, closing arguments. There'll be a rebuttal by the state prosecutors. I'm assuming there's going to be a rebuttal. And then you'll be on to the jury instructions for the jury. So you've got this happening up in Minnesota. Meanwhile, down in Florida, there's a fear that we may see unrest and violence happen again, like we saw about a year ago. Governor Ron DeSantis has signed a bill aimed at curbing violent protests and combating public disorder. First proposed in the Florida House of Representatives, HB 1, which was first thought of in January, passed the state's Senate Thursday evening and was signed into law by the governor this morning. Dubbed the Anti-Riot Bill, the legislation includes several recommendations introduced by the governor in his Combating Violence, Disorder, and Looting and Law Enforcement Protection Act. That was the thing he came up with last summer. The bill makes it difficult for cities and counties to cut funding for law enforcement, allowing local officials to be sued if they fail to stop a riot, and enhances penalties for participants committing criminal behavior during a riot. The law also creates a new category of criminal behavior known as, quote, aggravated riot, which takes place when a riot involves more than 25 people, causes serious bodily harm, or more than $5,000 in property damage, blocks streetways by force or threat of force, or uses or threatens to use a deadly weapon. Sponsors of the bill argue HB 1 is needed to make a clear distinction between peaceful and criminal behavior. Not only did we do that to put the public on notice as to what constitutes a riot, but also to make it clear to both protester and law enforcement where the line is drawn. That's according to Florida State Senator Danny Burgess. But other state officials are criticizing the bill, saying it violates crucial First Amendment rights. Quote, this isn't a game. This governor and his Republican allies love to talk about the Constitution while shredding it with extreme legislation like HB 1. Silencing the speech of those seeking equality is straight from the communist regime playbook. That's according to the Florida Ag Commissioner. The Florida Agriculture Commissioner is afraid of communism coming to Florida. I would recommend that the Florida Agriculture Commissioner go head on down and visit with the great people of Calle Ocho down in Miami, where the Cuban refugees and emigres and refugees who fled Castro's demented regime now live. Have a conversation with them about communist regimes. The criminal aspects of this bill are already illegal. HB 1 protects no one, makes no one safer, and does nothing to make people's lives better. It is simply to appease the governor's delusion of widespread lawlessness, and it's frightening to imagine the lengths to which he'll go to strip away rights and freedoms for political gain. By the way, the bill went right into effect once he signed it. So this is what you now have happening. Look, I believe wholeheartedly, 100% of the time, the right to redress your grievances, to protest, what have you. This ag commissioner, who I would have thought would be in charge of like understanding the price of beans or pork bellies or managing land, this ag commissioner has decided to say that this is a communist play. That this is a communist play by a known communist called Ron DeSantis, who is not a communist, by the way, while we're at it. Now, with that being said, let me point something out. This is where it gets very interesting. If the ag commissioner is so upset about this bill, then the ag commissioner should you know, go file a lawsuit to try to block it. Go file. You have standing. You're a state official. Go try to block this thing. I think it's going to be a tricky situation all the way around when you look at this. I think it's going to be a hard thing to handle, because I think the default position of almost everybody is that they don't want to see cities burn, neighborhoods burn, buildings vandalized, property taken, stolen, destroyed, tampered with, what have you. I think there is a commonality of purpose when you think about the right to be able to walk through the streets. But here's what I would say to the ag commissioner in the state of Florida. The ag commissioner should go and have a conversation with Nancy Pelosi and ask her, nay, demand from Speaker Pelosi that she remove the barriers and stanchions. Do this. Open the Capitol. Send the message to the rest of the world that we are back open for business in Washington, D.C. Dismiss the Praetorian Guard who are there guarding the Capitol at Nancy and Chuck's oddball behests. There is no riot in progress. There is no attack underway. And if you want to create a wartime footing in Washington, D.C., Nancy Pelosi, then you and Chuck and Mitch and Kevin need to get together and put down on paper the declaration of war against whatever it is you're declaring war on, and have the president sign it after you pass it through the House and the Senate. That's how we do things. We don't live under martial law. Some of us live under marital law, but not martial law. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110, News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brent Winterbull Show. 704-570-1110 is the number to be a part of the conversation. Let's start with Joe, who's over in York. Joe, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Through riots in the past.
And, yes.
The only thing that worked was 100% successful. In a city of a million people, there was a riot started in breaking store windows and stealing things. And the National Guard, you weren't supposed to shoot anyone to kill them, but shot the rioter in the leg. One rioter, that was the only riot in a city of a million people.
Yeah.
And that's what I would like to go back to, because what's happening is people are being killed, innocent people. Mm-hmm. Their business is being destroyed. A rioter has no right to destroy anyone else's property.
No, that's you're right about that. Here's the problem, though. If you have the National Guard opening up, firing weapons at rioters in the current climate in 2021, it's going to go badly quickly. You need to restore order. So order has to be restored. What that means is law enforcement has to be freed up to handle the interdiction of rioters who may be destroying property or looting or throwing projectiles at people. I mean, we saw the video last week of the CNN crew getting hit by water bottles. And the thing is, people go, oh, you just got hit by a water bottle. That water bottle that you see flying into the crowd is frozen. What you have happening are you have canned goods. So think about like a can of vegetables that you buy at the store. You put that in a freezer. Same thing with the water bottles. These projectiles are frozen. You ever been hit by an ice ball? You know, like when you're playing when you're a kid and you make a snowball, but if you pack it down tight and you use your bare hand, it'll turn into just a essentially like a baseball object. That's what happens. And those things can kill you. You can get killed by getting hit with a can of something or a frozen water bottle. And what happens is when people then get interdicted, they say, oh, no, I just threw a water bottle. It was a water bottle. No, it was a frozen water bottle, which is like getting hit with a piece of cement. So this is the problem. If you're going to use a National Guard, you've got to use a National Guard. I agree with the description that Governor McCrory once talked about when I was filling in for Bo Thompson. And he said, you use the National Guard so that you can free up law enforcement when it comes to securing buildings. The National Guard is securing buildings and property or standing there and, you know, helping first responders get out there to respond. But it's law enforcement that has the duty to get out there and restore the challenge that we're facing. Let me go out to Jim. Jim, welcome to the show. What's on your mind today, sir?
Yeah. Hi, Brian. How are you doing? I'm glad to hear you had a good weekend.
It was a great weekend.
I want to showcase another story about San Diego that has to do with the Navy because it affects all of us. It affects the entire country and everybody's security. And I'm wondering if you could indulge me and talk to me about let me talk a little bit about the decommissioning and the dismantling of the Bonhomme Richard.
Mm-hmm.
It was decommissioned and it was towed away last week to Galveston to be dismantled, not mothballed,
right.
Completely dismantled,
right.
With only half its service life
mm-hmm.
used.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for it is, the Navy states, is because the price to renovate it, to fix it up, and to put it back into service was about $10 billion. So because of the fact that the investigation is still going on, but because the fire raged for such a long time, apparently there was not too much command and control and firefighting capability
mm-hmm.
that was brought to bear in a proficient manner. And so it spells out a lot of deficiencies about the
let me cut to this. Okay, the ship cost $3 billion to build. If you were going to build a brand new one, it's $3 billion. The Navy decided it was $2.5 billion to repair the ship and put it back into service. The vessel is 22 years old, right? It's been out in service for a long time. It's gone through a retrofit or a refit for the F-35B Joint Task Fighter, right? The scrapping right. process is $30 million. So if you're going to spend $3 billion for a new ship from scratch, which would be state-of-the-art, versus the $2.5 billion to bring this thing back to usability, I mean they do have to make a calculation. The issue I would think is that you take this ship out of service, which it has been out of service, and you're down a ship. But no matter how you slice it, they're all about controlling what's going to happen with the inventory there. So.
No, I understand. It is a pragmatic and logical decision
yes.
to take it out. But this is where my misgiving is. Do you remember the USS Forrestal?
Yes.
Do you remember the fire in the USS
yes.
Forrestal in 1967
at yes.
Yankee Station?
Yes.
Okay. They used that as a training syllabus in the Navy for firefighting. And one of the things that was that they found out after they played the films back, the films that they used for the mm-hmm. carrier landings, was, you know, it was on, they were still on when the fire was going on, was that somebody ran out on the deck with a JP5 fuel hose instead of the water hose because they panicked.
Right.
Okay, so my suspicion is that the same thing happened and that the training and the discipline of the officer corps could have saved it if it was what I remember the U.S. Navy to be.
I would like to find out. Maybe Speaker Pelosi can commission a hearing into what happened to the Bonhomme Richard. Right?
Well, here we go. If we weren't so busy chasing our tail, spending money on investigations and the other things.
Jim, let me just say this. It's a very fair point. Here's what I would say. The Bonhomme Richard is infrastructure, Nance. Get going. 704-570-1110. I'm Brett Winterbull, News Talk 1110-993. WBT, let's head on. News Talk 1110 and 993 WBT. I'm Brett Winterbull. It's the Brett Winterbull Show. 704-570-1110 is the phone number to be a part of the conversation. I want to reach out and say hello to Hal, who I believe I met this weekend at NC9. Hal, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Brett, how you doing? I'm really glad you came, and it was awesome to hear you speak. And
thank you.
Let me give you a kudos to your bump music, folks. That's some good music, man.
Yeah, we got it. We got it today. Josh is behind the board today, and he's mixing some great tunes up for us.
Yeah, kudos to Josh. But thank you for speaking this weekend. And it seems like it's the first time I've really listened to your show. I've heard bits and pieces before, you know, in quotes. But
sure.
My big picture is it seems like all this stuff spawned and started either with the virus or they're using the virus as a tool.
Yes.
And the shutdowns, and then I found out in our area the money that Zuckerberg put into the elections processes not just happened in Georgia. It also happened here in North Carolina.
Right.
And I believe it's happening all over. And they did an end around on Board of Elections local ones. They went straight to their political partners with these things. And the harvesting that's been happening and people getting caught, we just had a big story here in the last few weeks about it happening down here. And then you mentioned she was talking about, Vice President Harris was talking about workforce development.
Yes, yes.
And so it is so ironic. You know, the George Floyd family or friends and family are from the Fayetteville, Rayford, Hope County area.
Right.
And they have already came down here and set up a, we're going to help people get computer training.
Okay.
And how does that stuff happen so fast if you're not getting deep pockets from somebody?
Well, it's a fair question, right? It's a fair question.
Yeah.
We have to understand conservatives. So let me just divide it this way. Let me divide Republicans and Democrats, okay, for the purposes of the discussion. Republicans, they operate kind of like what you saw this weekend at the convention there in Monroe, right? Everybody gets together. You got a set date. You come together. You hear from the candidates. You vote on resolutions and things like that. And then what do? You get up Monday morning and you go back to work and you go about your business and you kind of have an eye towards the state convention is coming up in 6 weeks or whatever, and we'll go to that. The people on the left, the Democrats, the progressives, whatever they want to call themselves, but let's just say Democrats, because you got Democrats and Republicans. The Democrats are politics is the thing 24/7, 365. I mean, they are very committed. There may be high Republican enthusiasm, but Democrats are committed. It's almost like, in some ways, the old joke about how on the breakfast plate the chicken is involved, but the pig is committed. Right. And
yeah,
so
totally.
And so that's the problem. So when people say, well, there's these groups that are spending money, of course they are. And they're going to, because it's what they do. George Soros, and I'm only using that I'm not using that in any kind of a disparaging way, just as an exhibit.
Correct.
Okay, Zuckerberg, Soros, Dorsey over at Twitter, Pichai over at Google. They have money funneling out year round for any number of things. And so this is not, hey, it's an election year, let's start doing election stuff. No, it's a transformation era, and let's transform as much as we can. So that's why they do say we're going to put the money out and teach people how to code or teach people to use computers or any of that stuff, because it's about winning over as many people as you possibly can. And that's money. Money is the mother's milk of politics.
Right. And so what we have to do to combat them is we have to be, I mean, we can't be like them. We can't, we live at 24/7 and do all this, that, and the other.
Right.
But what we do need to do is be more engaged with our people.
Absolutely.
And take it to the, you know, we typically have people who are, like you said, working and doing things mm-hmm. and their family mm-hmm. and doing all this stuff. They don't have time to do these mm-hmm. other things.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, if we had like media sources or radio shows like yours,
yes.
and some others in the state of North Carolina who mm-hmm. would work together in these other communities,
yep.
I think we could make a lot of headway.
Look, I don't have any doubt about that. But here's the key. The key, the secret to doing this, and it's going to take, it's not going to take a year or 5 years. We're talking about a 25-year plan here. What conservatives or just conventional old moderate Republicans, whatever they want to be called, what they need to do is you got to go get the kids when they are 14 and 15 and bring them out to these events, right? To the
right.
to the convention, and just let them sit in the back and watch how the process works. You know, we people who have never been involved have no idea about how this thing works. Okay, so we go and what do? Well, they just think you just go and vote on election day or on primary day. No, you got to get involved at the local level. And the best way to do that is to bring kids. I saw a couple of young people. I had one young man yep. come up to me and I was talking to him about, you know, potential opportunities that he was interested in. He's going to be a college student and he's, you know, he was asking me some questions about broadcasting and things like that. That's how you build the future. You build the future by attracting, and especially what I would say, the target group I would go for, especially would be young women, right? Your high school right. girls, your college age females, as well, because oftentimes they maybe feel like they're being marginalized or that the Republican Party's a old white guy party or something. I saw a lot of passionate women there that were passionate on the issues, that were passionate about our country and about the state of North Carolina. And so I think the trick is, while sure, they can write big fat checks out of Hollywood, but we or you or they can certainly build a ground game and you don't have to ask permission to do it.
Yeah, I just think that we got to get better on messaging, and we've got to reach
sure.
people that we don't typically reach on a regular basis.
That's very true. That's very
Thanks,
true.
Man. Great show.
Hey, I appreciate you being out there. Don't be a stranger, Hal. Okay, I appreciate you being out there, man. Thank you so much for your hospitality as well. 704-570-1110. So Bo Thompson's going to come up at the 30 past in the next hour, right at 5:35. But I want to kind of just do a little preview of a story. Have you seen what's happening with Pelotons? Have you been watching this Peloton thing that's happening? So this is not a commercial. I'm just telling you like what I've seen. You know, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, they're the people that always tell you like at 4th of July, don't buy fireworks, don't light off fireworks. Or they have the most dangerous toys list at Christmas time where it's like, you know, Bobby's first Ginsu set. Like, don't get that for a child, right? It's super sharp knives, right? Whatever it is. And so they'll tell you, don't get a BB gun. You'll put your eye out with that. Well, that's from a movie. But, you know, it's you have these things. Well, Peloton has now apparently drawn the ire of the Consumer Product Safety Commission, because if you know anything about it, it's a treadmill. They think they have a bike thing too, but it's a treadmill, and you run on the treadmill, and you got the person coaching you through the magic mirror and all that sort of stuff. Well, I'm going to tell you when we come back what it is that's happening. Kick it! Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Those are the Beastie Boys, not the Brony Boys, the Beastie Boys. Great to be here with you. Our number is 704-570-1110. Let me grab this call from Carrie. Carrie, welcome to the show. What's on your mind, sir? Hello?
Hey.
Yeah, hi. What's on your mind today, sir?
Oh, Brett, this is...
Terry. It's Terry. What's going on, Terry?
Well, you were mentioning the Order of the Longleaf Pine. My dad was awarded the Order of the Longleaf Pine,
wow.
which is the highest award given to a North Carolina citizen.
That's awesome.
That made a difference.
That is awesome.
And I don't like it being referred to as flippant. He was featured on WBT TV
wow.
News report,
mm-hmm.
and he served 30 years in the military. and he helped his community.
That's awesome.
And there were congressmen, mm-hmm. the sheriff of Union County, and other dignitaries at his home that served under him in the military when he was presented this award.
That's awesome.
He died in 2012 at 96, and I am very proud of him and to all the recipients of the Order of the Longleaf Pine.
That's cool. That is awesome.
I don't like anybody saying that, you know, the way you said it didn't come across right.
Oh, no, I didn't mean that. See, I was awarded a plaque. I was awarded a plaque from John Stewart there at the NC9 convention, and I had promised that I would recite it on the air, and because I had talked about it, and then I came back so quickly, I went and did it, and I promised to do it in a much slower way. There was no disrespect intended in any way, shape, or form in that regard. It was the fact that I had welched on my promise to John when he gave me that plaque, and so I don't mean any disrespect.
I believe you.
Yeah.
I love you. I listen to you every day, okay?
Thanks, Terry. I appreciate you, man. Thanks
for
being
up there. That was my comment.
You got it, buddy. That's Terry checking in and absolutely spot on with the commentary. So I was mentioning this issue about the Peloton treadmill. And I'm going to get into this with Bo when we're talking about a number of things, including the fact that the former President Trump is going to speak tonight in an interview with Sean Hannity that was taped over the weekend at Mar-a-Lago. So Peloton is catching some incoming from the Consumer Product Safety Commission. John Foley is the CEO of the company, and he's trying to defend some of this video that's been released over the weekend by the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission that shows a young boy, I think it's a young boy, who's playing with a ball. It shows him getting sucked under a Peloton treadmill while playing with the ball. So imagine you've seen treadmills, right? You've got the treadmill flying, in the direction that you would be traveling if you were running on it. So somehow this child starts the Peloton treadmill. And the child is playing with a ball, and as the ball makes contact with the treadmill, the ball starts to go underneath the treadmill, right? Because it's pulling it towards the front of the treadmill. And the kid, the little kid, it looks like he's maybe 2 or 3, reaches under with his arm, and then his other arm. And what happens is he's on the carpet, but he's now being pulled under the Peloton that is running. It looks like it's running at a pretty good speed. So he's starting to get pulled in underneath it. I don't know if he's yelling for help. It looks like he's clearly in distress. This is one of those sort of in-house video, video monitors that's looking at this. There's no sound, but he's obviously trying to get away from the thing. He manages to pull himself free and to go running out of the room, out of the shot. So that's what the Consumer Product Safety Commission released, that video clip of the little boy playing with the ball. Well, Foley, who is a father of 2 young children with his wife, who's the VP of apparel, blasted the Consumer Product Safety Commission in a message to Peloton members on Sunday afternoon, saying the company is not trying to impede an investigation into the $4,000 Tread Plus product. $4,000 for a treadmill. That's, whoa. He said, I imagine some members asked for their information to be protected in order to avoid personal attacks, like some that we've seen in response to the Tread Plus incidents that CSPC publicized yesterday. Our hearts go out to members who have had an incident where a child or a pet was injured. Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine. They're going to be devastating on both of those counts. And so he's pushing back. He's going back at this. And essentially, the back and forth indicates a belief that, hey, you need to be policing your kids around this equipment, too. You got to make sure it's either unplugged or disconnected or disabled so that a kid can't start that thing. Because, I mean, after all, a kid could get hurt with any number of different sorts of fitness equipment. Imagine if you have free weights, a kid picks up a free weight, drops it on himself or what have you. You got to be cautious in all those regards. A lot to think about. Now, the closing arguments have been concluded in Minneapolis, and the judge Peter Cahill, Hennepin County Superior Court, is issuing the instructions to this jury, and they will at that point then begin their deliberations. As I mentioned, the desire is to have them sequestered. The judge says you need to resist the urge to reach a verdict based on bias. So he wants this verdict to be based not on bias, but based on the circumstances in this case. One of the things that really hadn't come up in this prosecution's case that was summed up today in their closing argument was the idea that this occurred because George Floyd was an African American man. They're trying to make that argument on the prosecution side that Chauvin is a unique instance here, that he acted inappropriately and that he led to the death. He caused the death of George Floyd. But there isn't any an argument coming from the prosecution side in Hennepin County that is saying this was a bias crime. He is giving his final instructions to the jury. It's got to be a unanimous verdict. So if you're the defense attorney, you just have to pick one person off in terms of the verdict, and you can hang that up in terms of the way you're going to approach it. So now we will begin the waiting game as we're watching these instructions go out. There is this group of jurors that will then go into the jury room and then eventually into sequestration as they deliberate this. I'm wondering what this is going to look like because, to paraphrase something that was said earlier today by Trey Gowdy, when you listen to the jurors in cases like this, they typically want to hear from the defendant. The concern is that since Chauvin asserted his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination, it makes him look guilty to the jury. And that's one of the questions that have to be answered. We'll be watching all of this and the developing story therein as we continue to watch this story. Another great hour straight ahead. I'm Brett Witterbull. Hour number three underway. I am Brett Witterbull. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you. You know, this back and forth with Maxine Waters has certainly drawn a lot of attention. You heard that sound clip during that last news update in which, you know, she says, listen, this has to be a guilty, guilty, guilty verdict. If it's not, she says she doesn't want it to be manslaughter. It's got to be a murder case. And if it doesn't happen, then you got to stay out on the streets and you got to get more confrontational. The thing is, the jury has listened to this trial. Universally, I have heard the prosecution's case has been approved, celebrated, has been something that's been a model of one of these sorts of prosecutions. This is from the commentators on the cable channels. So now it's in the hands of the jury. Now it's in the hands of the jury, and they have to make the decision as to whether or not the burden has been met, as to whether or not the situation there has been proven beyond that reasonable doubt for Chauvin to have to go to prison at this point. So we await this verdict. We wait to see what's going to happen. Odds are, if they come back fast, you know it's going to be a conviction. If it takes longer, the odds of conviction are probably starting to get reduced at that point. But there are a number of other challenges that are before us right now. And I want to call out a little bit of the hypocrisy of what it is that's happening by our elected leaders in Washington, D.C. We have not seen a single solitary hearing when it comes to what's going on at the Texas border that's been televised, available, witnessable by we, the people in this country. We have not seen any of these important committees there in the Congress do a hearing into what it is that is happening. Tom Tillis is the senator from right here in North Carolina. Tom Tillis is a man who understands the sort of chicanerous games that go on in Washington, D.C. He knows what it is that's happening. And Tom Tillis says the Biden border crisis is coming down to this. He promised security and dignity to migrants. And this is how he failed. President Joe Biden can deny it all he wants, but the reality is we have a crisis at our southern border. I saw it with my own eyes last month when I visited the U.S.-Mexico border in Texas. The surge of unaccompanied minors and subpar living conditions of migrants and the state of an overworked and overwhelmed Border Patrol have been direct consequences of this failed administration's policies. This was never supposed to happen under Biden's watch. As a candidate, he promised the American people he'd secure the border while ensuring the dignity of migrants. As president, neither of those things have come to pass. Instead of upholding promises, Biden decided it would be better to make a hard left turn on his immigration agenda. One of his first acts in office was sending an immigration bill to Congress to grant mass amnesty to illegal immigrants. He also ended the Remain in Mexico policy, which curbed illegal immigration by stopping the abuse of our nation's asylum laws. Through their words and actions, the Biden administration sent a clear signal that the border is open for anyone and everyone, and the world took notice. Mexico's president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, also known as AMLO, was no fan of President Trump's policies, said bluntly, expectations have been created with the government of Biden. There would be better treatment of migrants, and this has caused Central American migrants and also from our country wanting to cross the border, thinking it was easier to do so. It's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened, he says. So what have we seen? Well, last October, 71,945 illegal immigrants were caught trying to enter the United States. There were similar apprehensions in the months leading up to the Biden inauguration. 72,000 in November, 74,000 in December, 78,000 in January. But when Joe Biden was sworn in to his first full month in office, there were 101,000 illegal immigrants who were apprehended at the border. Then in March, the numbers skyrocketed to 172,000. Those numbers have real-world consequences on real-world people. This is all amidst the backdrop of the coronavirus pandemic. This is a terrible situation. I'm willing to bet you, ladies and gentlemen, with 101,000 in February, 172,000 in March, by the time April closes out next week, we're probably going to see north of 250, 275,000 people just for the month of April. Add that series of numbers up. That's getting you well in excess of 500,000 people who have migrated into the United States, despite the fact that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will tell you the border is closed. You are being lied to. Senator Tillis is saying this is unacceptable. This has to stop. We have to secure the border. It all depends on how you define secure the border. It all depends on how you define an out-of-control or an under-control border. Look, here's the thing to remember about this. Here's the thing to remember. Is the border really out of control, or is it functioning exactly as desired by those individuals who profit from what it is that is happening at that border? Don't think for a moment the cartels, the human trafficking organizations, the NGOs are all able to have an impact on policy. There are American politicians. Now, it may not be in Washington. It may not be at the state level. It may be at the local level. But somebody is enriching themselves as a result of this current crisis. And we have to find out exactly who they are. I'm Brett Winterbull, News Talk 1110-99.3. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Winterbull Show. It is interesting. They have now recessed. The court is in recess for a period of time as the juries are deliberating on this verdict involving the killing of George Floyd, the Derek Chauvin trial. And so we are waiting to see what the outcome of this story is going to be and how it is this jury is going to find. And boy, you can only imagine the pressure on those jurors to get this thing right based on the obvious concerns out there in cities around the country that there may be another incident or a night of violence and unrest. So no doubt they are well aware of what it is that is happening out there. And they probably, you know, they really probably feel like, you know what? We got to get this thing right. And you would hope that every juror would want to get things right. I myself have served on a murder, on a jury that was considering a murder case. This, you know, this is slightly different in the case that I was a juror involved in. It was somebody who had decided that they wanted to settle a score out on a public street adjacent to a pizza place. And as the defendant fired a weapon at an intended target, a rival gang member, he missed and shot and killed an innocent man who was just going out to get pizza for his family, and took that man's life. And it's a very sad thing to be a part of the tragedy that is a homicide like that. And you want to think about it, and you want to think about it long and hard, because you've already had you've had one family destroyed because of the loss of a loved one, especially a father in that home. And you know that another family is also going to be destroyed, has already been destroyed by the actions of the defendant. And, you know, you're going to sentence that person to prison for a long period of time. We ended up voting to convict. And I don't know the exact sentence. It's lost to time for me, but it was certainly it's a very difficult thing to sit there and say, okay, you committed murder. Okay, you're going to prison for X. That was decided by the judge. But as a person who was taken apart in that process, it's certainly an eye-opening process. And it was quite interesting to me. From the perspective of sitting there as a juror, you could see how much work was being put in by the prosecution team, by the defense team. You could see how much work was put in that regard. And it was all about a life hanging in the balance because a life was taken in that way. So it is interesting stuff. No doubt it is interesting stuff. What the statistics show about police shootings and public safety. This is a piece that's running over at The Hill. It's an opinion piece over at The Hill newspaper. And what it does consider is, you know, looks at the numbers, looks at the statistics, and, you know, you can draw your conclusions. Peter King is an opinion contributor over there at The Hill, and he notes, whatever the verdict in the trial of former Minneapolis policeman Derek Chauvin for the killing of George Floyd, that case and the tragedy of the death this time of 20-year-old Dante Wright during a traffic stop in nearby Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, it should not be used to advance the narrative of systemic police racism, Peter King writes, and brutality nationwide. No one has done more to save and protect black lives, indeed all lives, than the men and women in police uniforms. He goes on to say, among the victims in today's social and racial upheaval are the overwhelming majority of innocent, hardworking people living in minority communities who are being victimized by nationwide spikes in violent crime. Their communities are already beset by lack of job opportunities and quality education, neither of which is their fault, nor the fault of the police, yet they are beset by increased crime as well. Police have become victims, too, as they are expected to do the impossible while being attacked from all sides, portrayed as excessively violent or trigger happy. He goes and looks at the numbers on statistics. In New York City in 2018, 36,000 NYPD officers answered more than 6 million calls. In all of those calls, 35 police shooting incidents were reported. Despite one common refrain that the city's police are trigger happy, of the 35 incidents, 6 involved police suicides or attempted suicides, and 4 involved animals. So we're talking about barely 0.01% of shooting incidents or 99.9% of police calls in which no shots were fired by the police. More importantly than cold numbers are the human elements. In the early 1990s, New York City averaged 2,000 murders a year, with approximately 75% of murder victims being African American. During the 20 years of the Giuliani and Bloomberg mayoral administrations, and for some time afterward, police commissioners Bill Bratton, Ray Kelly, and others implemented proactive procedures called the Broken Windows Policy. During those administrations, murders were reduced by more than 80%, which means that more than 10,000 African American lives were potentially spared. Despite claims that this aggressive policing constituted a reign of terror against African Americans and other minorities, Commissioner Kelly's approval rating among African Americans was more than 2-1, 63% favorable, 27% unfavorable, and 4-1 among Hispanics, 76% to 18% unfavorable when he left office in 2013. Yet, following the George Floyd killing last May, violent demonstrations and riots, labeled peaceful protests by many in the media, broke out in New York and continued through the summer. Buildings and businesses were vandalized and destroyed. Macy's flagship store was looted. St. Patrick's Cathedral was defaced. Molotov cocktails, bricks, and rocks were thrown at the police who were trying to restore order. Hundreds of cops were injured. Many hospitalized. One senior NYPD officer described to me how he was hit in the face with a brick. A mob surrounded the ambulance and tried to prevent him from being taken to the hospital. In response to the violence in the streets and social upheaval in New York, Governor Cuomo criticized the NYPD and said he was proud to stand with the protesters. Mayor Bill de Blasio and the city council defunded the NYPD by $1 billion and passed legislation restricting reasonable police actions. Unfortunately, the results are now in. In 2020, you saw a 97% increase in shootings and a 44% increase in homicides, with the overwhelming number of victims being minority members. Subway crime is up. 87% of respondents in a recent MTA survey said they are worried about increasing crime on subways and are avoiding mass transit entirely. Police are retiring in record numbers. People, once again, are afraid to walk the streets in New York and in many other major cities. So far in 2021, shootings and murders in New York City are continuing to increase dramatically. It is time for political, governmental, community, and religious leaders to stand up against the invidious, reckless anti-police attacks and rhetoric which are undoing decades of progress against crime and are causing death and suffering to innocent people. Peter King is a former congressman, served 28 years in the Congress. Bo Thompson comes by next. I'm Brett Witterbull, News Talk 1110-993 WBT. News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brett Witterbull Show. See, I brought this on purpose because Bo Thompson's coming on right now. And I always get asked, like, why do you use Kickstart My Heart? Because it sounds like engines revving and moving and going to and fro. And we're a PM drive show. And we like to get together with the AM drive show, which is Bo Thompson's show, and kick it with him. Now, Bo Thompson, I have a big smile on my face, and I'm happy today. Go ahead and ask me why.
Why are you happy today?
Because I got an email last night from the commissioner of my NASCAR Fantasy League, the well-respected man about town, Mel Freeman, who told me I won. I won last night. I won. I picked. Are you ready for this? Get ready for it. You're going to be amazed. I picked. You ready? Seriously?
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready.
I picked Hamlin and Bowman and Austin Dillon and then somebody I forgot, but Chase Briscoe, but he stunk. And I ended up with 1-2. In that matchup there at Richmond. So I ended up winning out in terms of the week. So I'm in a great mood, Bo Thompson, because Mel Freeman told me about it.
I'm impressed that you can keep up enough with fantasy NASCAR.
It's hard.
I did fantasy football. Mm-hmm. I tried fantasy basketball one time.
Yep.
And I tried fantasy baseball one time. Now, baseball about drove me nuts because baseball's every night.
That is hard. You know, that's
at least
insane.
With NASCAR, mm-hmm. I can see it mm-hmm. being compared to fantasy football where you have
right.
you know one event a week.
36 weeks. That's it.
And I probably would like NASCAR because when the NFL season's over after 17 weeks, I go through withdrawal.
So that's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna put you in next year. I'll put you in. You can join, and we can do rubbing and racing. You know what I'm saying?
But I know much less about NASCAR. So
that's okay.
More of a crapshoot.
That's even more fun. Even more fun. You're not gonna lay in bed at night worrying about your sits and starts, right? You're gonna be like, okay.
Probably means I'll win. You know, I mean,
you
isn't the person who always
will.
Wins the NCAA pool or the fantasy football league, you know, someone's significant other that chooses it based on uniforms or something like that?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I've done that. Absolutely. Yeah. That, let me tell you, I knew a guy back once upon a time who used to bet preseason hockey. You want to talk about a glutton for punishment. What are you doing? Here's a question for you, though. I would love to see a fantasy political league based on, like, political stuff and what's going on. I don't know how you'd put it together. It'd probably be really hard, but whoever had Donald Trump coming out tonight with an interview with Hannity is certainly going to be somebody a lot of people are going to be paying attention to.
But that's a tough one to predict, though, right? That he's going to do the first interview with Hannity. It's going to be interesting because I believe his first interview post-election was with Maria Bartiromo.
Yes, that's right.
But now the first one post leaving White House on television. Now, he's done phone interviews.
Yes.
And like we mentioned this morning when you and I were talking, he technically has done an on-camera interview with Laura Trump that was online.
That's right.
This is the first one that's on a network or on cable or something that's, you know, has massive distribution.
That's interesting. So do we expect any... You think he'll lay a little fire down there, or you think he'll be reasonable and, you know, just kind of talking about how he's disappointed with the policy?
Well, see, it's the interviewer, I think. I think Hannity will stoke him a little bit.
That's right. I think
now, there
right.
will be people listening right now who probably say, well, Hannity's probably more likely to give him softballs than other people you could imagine. I don't know. I feel like Hannity, he could play it both ways. I mean, he's obviously not going to get certain questions that he might get if he was going to go on ABC or CBS.
Sure.
But I do think, Hannity's realizing there's some eyeballs on this, so I wonder if he'll stoke it a little bit.
I wonder if we're going to get any kind of reaction from Jen Psaki or President Biden in the wake of this.
You might in 6 months.
No, he's going to talk in 9 days. He's going to give a speech in nine days.
Okay, 9 days. That's like 6 months.
He's going to talk about court packing. All right, so let's move off of the red meat potato, you know, meat and potatoes on the politics here. The Chauvin trial continues. Now you've got the jurors. They have their deliberations underway as we speak. A couple of very long closing arguments. The prosecution made their closing argument, went on for about an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then you had the defense, who probably did about a three-hour summation. You can feel the tension out there in this country as a result of how this jury may end up finding.
So I have a question for you.
Sure.
So I heard you talking earlier about what it means if you have an immediate verdict versus what it means if it takes longer.
Yeah.
What do you think is the window for a quick verdict? In other words, is a quick verdict to you tonight, or is a quick verdict to you anytime tomorrow? Or where do you draw the line of when it starts becoming something that is long versus short? That makes sense?
Yeah, totally makes sense. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I would say probably if you get to Wednesday and there's no verdict, that means it's going longer. I would call a quick verdict tonight, tomorrow morning kind of a thing. But the longer these jurors, they may just want to get it done fast, because the longer they're sitting in sequestration, they know that the tensions are going to build up, and they are eminently aware of the stakes in cities around this country. So I'm going to call 3:30 tomorrow afternoon is when they're going to bring it in.
3:30 tomorrow afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So we obviously know what the reaction is amongst the protesters if Chauvin is found not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he's found guilty, then what? Do these become more like celebratory gatherings, or will there still be unrest? I mean, I've been trying to figure out what I think is going to happen here.
I think it's one of these situations where you will see unrest regardless of outcome.
Right.
Not that it's celebratory, but I think you'll see, I think you're going to see some measure of unrest. Now, is that Portland for night number 355 burning? Maybe. I think you'll see something for sure in Minneapolis and Brooklyn Center, because that reality on the ground there is you have a story that's processing its way out with the jury, and you've got one that is still to be determined. And oh, by the way, there's a new story moving that the do you remember the officer involved shooting in Knoxville at the STEM school a couple of weeks ago? So it appears that there may have been a miscommunication of sorts, and this young man may not have had a firearm at all. And so if that's the case, that is certainly something that's going to, it's starting to move on the wires. There's more details starting to come out now, and I think that is going to certainly be a part of the conversation too.
Well, and also we're talking about, and when I say celebratory, you know what I mean.
Of course I do. Yeah, yeah.
As far as there will be
like a catharsis where people say we've got justice, right?
Celebrating justice, I guess maybe is a better phrase to use. But there's also the scenario, of course, Brett, if there is, if it's a hung jury, if they don't have a verdict, and this case, you know, doesn't, you know, it has no outcome or it has no verdict, then I think that's also in the category that where there would be the probably the worst case scenario as far as demonstrations going on and possible violence. But, you know, people have been talking about guilty, not guilty. There's also that middle ground that I think would fall into the category of more what you'd see with a not guilty verdict.
Yeah, that's going to be, I think that one's the most troubling possibility, because clearly, well, at least from my point of view, I think that Chauvin was responsible for the death of George Floyd. He was handcuffed. He was on the ground. He was leaning on his neck, all that sort of stuff that we saw in the video. And once you're cuffed and on the ground, you're in the custody of the police. So, you know, at that point, what are you still doing? I think that's, you know, reckless disregard for human suffering. And, you know, I think the jurors are going to see that. If he ended up getting acquitted. That I think that you're now probably talking in the neighborhood of what happened after Rodney King. I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's that big of a that would feel like it was an unjust verdict. I think, but you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, and I think everybody watching this realizes the stakes here and all the different scenarios, and it's not just one and two. I think there's one, and then there's a possible deep gap between one and two.
Yeah, for sure.
Or guilty versus not guilty.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. Finally, did you see the video of the Peloton and the child?
I saw it because of you.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah, and see, here's the thing. I've contemplated the idea of going down the Peloton road for my wife.
Yes.
And, you know, for Christmas presents in years past, and just have never pulled the trigger on it. And it's because when I look at the whole, it's not just the the physical thing you're buying, it's the subscription too, right?
Correct. That's right. That's right.
And so I haven't done it. That's not to say that I may do it someday. I like the idea of it in some ways.
News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, Brent Witterbull Show. Oh, it's that time of the day when we check in with our good friend Mark Garrison.
Yahoo.
He hosts a Charlotte at 6. Hello, Mark Garrison. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
All right. Pack your patience eating out or going to a drive-thru. Restaurants are dying for help.
Oh, it's
getting worse by the day.
Do I know it?
Yeah, the offer of signing bonuses and higher pay not attracting workers, and it is so bad the Arby's in our area shutting down on Sundays to give the workers they do have a day off. We'll talk to Arby's CEO about that.
My daughter was able to grab a job this weekend because of the shortage of the...
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there are jobs out there. They're begging you to come work.
That's right.
Member of Charlotte City Council, Dimple Ashmera, in some hot water, facing some possible campaign finance violations. Brett Jensen tracked her down today, and she hung up on him.
Oh, no, you can't hang up on breaking Brett.
So now you got a long list of people who have been hanging up on Brett, right? Chauvin trial gone to the jury now. The mayor and the governor had a press conference a few minutes ago begging people to stay calm, although the protests are expected no matter the verdict, including here in Charlotte.
In fact, you know, the narrative now is the judge apparently slammed what Maxine Waters said about the trial, and that could be the basis for an appeal.
Really?
Yep.
That's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 6:35. It's Monday, so our news quiz, we'll see how smart Anna and Boomer really are.
Ooh! I'm gonna stay neutral. I'll stay neutral.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, Mark Garrison, we're looking forward to it.
Thanks,
man.
Sir.
Thank you, buddy. That's Mark Garrison coming up. Charlotte at 6. Yeah, the Judge Cahill there in Hennepin County, Minnesota, slammed Representative Waters' comments about the idea of it's got to be a guilty verdict or else, or we're going to continue confrontation and that sort of stuff. You know, that could be interpreted. Maybe they ought to call Amy Klobuchar. Amy Klobuchar, who once ran for president, came up well short. Somebody should call Amy Klobuchar and say, what Representative Waters said, could that be like jury tampering? Could she face, and remember, she went and did it in Minnesota during the curfew. So it's not like Maxine Waters was walking around her posh estate in Southern California or her posh estate in Washington, D.C. She was actually there on the ground in city of and issuing the challenge and saying essentially it better be guilty, 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 or we're going to be confrontational on the street. What are you doing that now? So that I think, you know, it's interesting. There was a president that got blasted for not accepting the certified outcome of an election. Are we hearing from a congressperson the threats that people will not accept the certified outcomes of a jury verdict? I mean, it is kind of an interesting dichotomy, isn't it? And we'll see how this works. I'm guessing, because I'm looking at CNN, and they couldn't care less. They care about the case, they care about the trial, but nobody's going to look into that. Nobody's going to say, hey, what about this? What about that? Because if he does get convicted, and what if they do enter into the record and they say, you know what, we don't think we got a fair hearing because you had the person come in 2 days before the jury got the case and said, if you don't go the way we want it to go, then it's going to be no go. This is all tricky stuff. It's important to understand where you are when you are in the public eye. You are a person of influence. And I Representative Waters, Chairwoman Waters, there on the Finance Committee, she is somebody with an immense amount of influence. She is. She is a very high-profile Democratic member of the Congress, so it remains to be seen what it is that is going to happen. But I can tell you this, that's going to do it for me today. I appreciate you guys spending time with me. We'll do it again tomorrow, starting at 3. Thanks to Josh and Mark and Boomer and Anna and everybody else who checked in on the show today. I'm Brett Winterbull, News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT.